There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, you're banned.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and the Friday Eve edition of the show, Thursday edition of Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. And the phone number, the text line, quick reminder here. Most of you know it, but if you're new to the show, welcome. We're happy to have you. 343-0106. 343, if you're new around here, 251 is where we are. 343-0106 gets you through on a call or a text to our very popular text line, in addition with the FM Talk 106.5 app. All the other stuff going on there, it's like a multi-tool for your phone. It's like a Leatherman with that, like, oh, do I need to use a screwdriver? Oh, I need to use a serrated blade. Listen, you can stream the station, get our podcast on the app. That's the first place they post. They post elsewhere, but they populate there first. Social media feeds on their show schedules and one button text and call. Well, one button to start the text or one button to call from there. But on the bottom of the page there, the main page, you'll see a microphone icon. That's the talkback feature. So if you want to press that, lets you record a message, emails it to the show, and I can play your message back here on the air. So check that out as well. All right, and good to have this man back in studio and lot to talk about with the executive director of Mobile Baykeeper, William Strickland. How you?
I'm doing all right. Always glad to be on. It's cooling down a little bit, so yeah, the
you felt it this morning.
Yeah, start cooling up, huh?
Yeah, and they're like the places we'll talk about off there. They've moved up there a little bit, but they're smaller. But they're starting ones,
and I don't mind.
Yeah, right. Just need them to be some of them be that 15 inch, so we can
fry some trout. That's right.
That's for sure. So a lot to talk about with you here, and we will come back because in between times when you are in here, I get texts and people say, what's the update on the mud dumping? What's the update? So I want to get to that. But first, this is what's old is new again, or moves to the top of the stack. This discussion of Barry Steam Plant, or whatever, Plant Barry, the fancy name. I call it Barry Steam Plant. Barry Steam Plant, and we've had the long-running question about whether to move it to an upland site, line mud,
right,
or cap it in place, right? And these discussions have, 5 years, six?
It's been almost 10 years.
10
now.
Years. Yeah. 10 years of what to do here. And we've talked about it, y'all, about the danger from an acute situation. In other words, some kind of levee failure that has been discussed, which didn't worry me as much because I've been up there when the river's really high and it didn't look like it was happening, but it could. And also the chronic. They are unlined, leaching these pollutants into the water table. Am I correct on that?
Toxic heavy metals, absolutely.
Okay, so that has been the long-going discussion. What to do about that? We're going to move them. We're going to do that. And now a report comes out that gives us an idea of how high the tachometer is on these pollutants here at Barry Steam Plant. Who did the research? What did we find out here?
Yeah, so there were three researchers on this paper, two out of the University of Alabama and one out of Texas A&M. And these researchers were looking at suspended sediment in the river in and around Plant Barry.
Okay.
And so what they found was that these levels of arsenic and cadmium in particular, which if you don't know, arsenic and cadmium are not good for you. They cause cancer and a number of other terrible diseases that you don't want to get. But the levels in the sediment were as high as they found, and in some instances higher, in the Kingston, Tennessee spill, which was one of the worst disasters in our nation's history when it comes
bring
to
people,
environmental.
Because that's kind of been the benchmark on discussion on coal ash being stored next to the waterway. What happened in Kingston?
Yeah, so in 2008, and this is what brought it to the attention and why we have laws in place for this now. So in Kingston, Tennessee, What they had was a levee failure, and it wasn't an in particularly big storm. We're talking an inland area, obviously a lot of rain, but over time, these unlined levees.
Hey, y'all picture this, like, you've been to Barrie, you know what we're talking about, but if you haven't, you push up a earthen levee that makes the pond where you put the...
Yeah, it's completely earthen. It's not engineered with concrete.
Like you're making a big, big catfish pond with the levees, right?
And that's a great picture. It is like a catfish pond, and you know, there's not much difference between the size of a levee between a catfish pond and a nearby property and mm-hmm. between Plant Barrie and the Mobile River.
Yeah. I mean,
when the river's high, you're right there on it. And so you're dealing with an earthen dam next to this big coal ash pond.
So it was the same thing in Kingston.
They have them all over the country because that's how we burn coal. We made energy. And back in the day, currently, coal that's burned to make energy is put in upland, inland line landfills. So everything that's burned at Plant Barrie, which they do occasionally burn some coal, is not placed there in the pond any longer. It's being all moved off site to modern line landfill.
This is the legacy coal ash.
This is right. Yeah. So this is what everybody did. It wasn't as if we broke the rules at that time. And there in Kingston, 2008, we had this massive spill where millions of tons of coal ash spilled up there in Kingston. And there's photos of houses buried in coal ash. And what that resulted in is this massive cleanup. And so some things that people need to know is that the workers that went to clean that up, they're seeing these chronic health issues that we know arsenic and cadmium and lead and mercury cause. So there's been an estimated around 40 deaths related to folks
that are up to 40
cleaning
now.
Up. That's right. And there's a book released recently. I'll get the title at the break for you. But and then lots of other people have ended up with these same chronic diseases. And so that was 2008 in Kingston. It took us, of course, until 2015 to put a law in place, even though everybody's on the same page. And actually, since that time, we've seen two other big spills in the southeast. Same thing, levee breaches or failures. And that's just in the southeast. So we're talking about three major spills in the southeast since 2008. And the largest remaining pond in the southeast is a coastal site right here, just north of Mobile.
We're the largest.
That's right.
I didn't know that. Okay. One of the things about the Kingston thing, you talk about the the human beings that are getting these health issues, you know, the 40 here, but also, and y'all can look at this two ways, the absolute disaster it was for the waterway. It's on the Kingston was on the what river?
That's another one I'll have to look up for us, Sean. I don't know that one off the top of my head.
Yeah, I think it's not on the French. It's on the...
No, it's Holston. One that,
it's
that's
on the Holston.
Not as famous.
Yeah, maybe it's on the Holston. But y'all, so where this happened, the fish kill, I'll say fish and turtles and anything else there was huge. And then from the fiscal side, y'all, and maybe I don't have the numbers in front of me, and I don't know if William does, but if y'all looked at what the mitigation of that clean, that was the thing that got my attention too. Sure, I'm a hook and bullet guy, but also, you know, fiscal conservative. And I looked at what the cost for the cleanup in Kingston was compared to what it would be to have removed it. And it was massive.
Oh, yeah, the cleanup thing was massive. The cleanup in Tennessee was well north of $1 billion.
Yeah, billions, I think.
And we may be into the billions now. As it's
this
still
is the cleanup what happened after the...
Yeah, so that happened in 2008, and it was just a couple years ago they did a study with wild turkeys where they were still finding elevated levels of mercury.
Those are using that waterway down along the creek. Yeah,
that's right. They're eating those little bugs that live there as well. So it inundated that area, and it caused massive fish kills and ecological disaster. And, of course, sitting alongside the Mobile Tensaw Delta, it would mean it would be devastating, as it is the most biologically diverse river delta in North America.
So the levels here in this study, and y'all can look at this over at the website for Mobile Baykeeper, right?
Yeah, mobilebaykeeper.org.
So it says the study here, and you link through the study, but the arsenic levels are comparable to those at Kingston after the coal ash spill, a new study finds. So is the sampling inside the pond?
No, sir. We're talking in the river. These are the sediments found in the river.
So you're saying, so after the failure at Kingston, those levels, after the breach, they measured, then they come here in the Mobile River next to, not inside the coal ash pond, in the Mobile River, the levels are comparable.
That's correct.
Because one of the things I looked at, trying to be a fair mind on this, I said, well, what was our old, we learned in school, dilution is the solution to pollution. Mm-hmm. Now, I said, even if we have this leaching that's not, I was more worried about the aquifer and the water table going to the west versus the river to the east. But if the leaching's there, I was like, well, it'll dissolve, with the volume of water coming down the Mobile River, but they're testing this
in the river.
In the river, y'all. So, I mean, y'all fish there, right? I mean, it gets real cold, and I'm not telling y'all anything you don't know where the bass stack up. But those levels there were at the same where
up
the levees failed.
Correct.
Alarms are going off in my head, man.
Well, it should be shocking. And one thing we've known for a long time, you mentioned the groundwater, is that their own testing in their monitoring wells around the plant have been high for arsenic and cadmium. They're always violating the permit that they have in the groundwater. And so it shouldn't be a surprise that they're elevated in the river. But in my mind,
I had pictured it, William, this way. Like, I'm picturing the underwater aquifer and the fact that it could congregate versus to the east side. You got this constant flow of water here. But to hear that the levels in that constant flow of water are that high,
that tells us something, doesn't it?
That tells me something very big, because if you had taken that part of the Mobile River and isolated it behind a dam or something like that, then if they could test it in moving water that has that level, what would it have been? Well, in a place that's not moving. So the groundwater must be at levels, in my mind, not a scientist here, but a lot higher because it doesn't have the flow.
Well, you can go again on our website and see that report that we did. I believe that was about 6 years ago now, that show those groundwater levels. And yes, they are much higher concentrations in the groundwater. And what's unfortunate is the plans that are currently in place to how to deal with this coal ash is to leave it in place and to leave it in the groundwater still. So even if they do cap in place, the plans are to leave it sitting in groundwater, and it shows it right there in the plants.
To leave it, okay, yeah, cap in place once again. So, and cap in place at this point, it doesn't really, they're not adding anything new in there because this is a legacy.
Correct.
They're now hauling it to an upland site. But so, in other words, y'all, the top of the Tupperware is sealed, but the bottom is like a colander.
That's right. It's 22 million tons of coal ash that will remain there alongside the Mobile River. The top is sealed. The sides are still made of birthday cake, if you will, to use your analogy. But it's dirt, and the bottom's dirt with groundwater sitting in it. So we've, of course, said that this is not a great plan for years and years now. There is a third option, and the third option's been there the whole time, but now the power company has said, and we're grateful for this, that they want to recycle as much of that coal ash as possible. The problem that we have is that there is no legally binding agreement showing that they what they plan to do, and they have said they
it goes
also
into
plan
concrete,
to cap in place.
Right, so they could put it in concrete. My worry is, once again, this finding in this study, y'all have got to go look through it. It just, when I got this last week, I stuck by it, is that I guess I had thought, okay, we have time because I even though the Kingston failed, I was more worried about chronic than acute. But that's not even, so the levels that are in the river right now with no failure of the earthen dam are at the level it was in Kingston after the failure. And we know that that was a massive cleanup effort and still ongoing problems.
Environmental cleanup efforts in the history of our
country.
And
we're running those same levels right now.
That's right.
So if there needed to be, because there's this back and forth, and what do we do back and forth? If there needed to be, I don't know, a catalyst to this to move it forward, to me, this has got to be it, that even as it sits right now, it's putting those levels out.
Well, that's certainly what we're hopeful for, is that this study will help people to come to their senses and say, you know what, we're going to do the right thing. We're going to put a legally binding agreement in place to remove all of it, recycle as much of it as we can into concrete, mm-hmm. and then, you know, put it somewhere else where it's safe if we cannot recycle all of it, and within a timely manner. That's all we're asking. It seems reasonable, and we are hopeful that this study brings people to their senses.
Coming right back. Got your text. We'll get to this. And also, before we finish up, we will update on mud dumping. Our guest, William Strickland from Mobile Baykeeper.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 1223 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. 343-0106 for a call or a text. My guest, William Strickland, Executive Director at Mobile Baykeeper. This study we're talking about is on the website, mobilebaykeeper.org.
Or you can find it at al.com, land, yap. Everybody's covered it.
It's you know, got to read through this. And it has been, it was an eye-opener for me because I kind of thought what is reported here, I thought that was a possibility that that could happen if there was some kind of failure, but that wasn't the thing. But now to find out that the levels of arsenic and cadmium are as high in that sample site as they are in the place where they had a breach is something. I want to ask you a couple questions here from the text line. This one, has Alabama Power give away to the secondary market for use in cement and drywall? They will move it for free if material costs nothing. I guess the idea is instead of selling it, if they would just give it, y'all come get some.
Well, one thing that's an important note here is I'm open, we are open, the community's open to any and all solutions that gets this stuff off of our river and out of our river. The problem that I'm having is I've been here for now 4 years and I've had zero meetings with the power company despite asking repeatedly.
Before you got here, nothing happened either.
We're going to need to have a dialogue, and it doesn't have to be with us. Hopefully our leaders will see this and they can negotiate something with them as well. But we don't know what their plans are to do, and recycling it to concrete or, hey, giving it away so that it can be used for some other aggregate all sounds good to me.
Right. This texter said, why not just clean up the coal ash a little bit at a time instead of trying to pay billions to clean it all at once? Just start somewhere.
Well, I think that's a good point. And one thing people need to know is that is how coal ash is cleaned up. And so in North Carolina, Georgia, Tennessee, these other places, they have cleaned up the majority, if not all of their coal ash. North Carolina has gotten all of it up. Georgia's getting the majority. It does take time, but they have found that it took less time than they originally planned, and came in under budget. One of the few projects that took less time and came under budget, and you see that across the board in the Southeast where they've decided to clean up their coal ash ponds.
I do like it, but that unnamed texture, the spirit of that, I like it because people sometimes will just, what is it, paralysis by analysis or whatever, they'll say, well, here's this big thing. Well, if you had started 2 years ago doing something in a measured way.
Again, you just look to our neighbors in Georgia where they've already moved the majority of their coal ash and all out of their coastal sites if we would have started then. And that was all voluntary.
And by the way, this is the same parent company, Southern Company.
That's correct.
In Georgia and here in Alabama.
That's right.
So in Georgia, the same company is doing this.
Correct.
So y'all know it's not unprecedented.
Absolutely not.
It's way
precedented. We are the exception. The rule is what the other states are doing.
Bunch of unnamed textures today. Now I got a name. Here's David. Thank you, David. The Mobile River is the mouth of a 5/6 river watershed. How do we know these minerals, arsenic, mercury, are coming from Barry?
That's a great question. So and I just want to clarify for the knowledge, the Mobile River and where Plant Barry sits is right at the confluence of the Tombigbee and Alabama Rivers. And
just Davenger Strait. Yep.
It does make the Mobile River the fourth largest river by volume in the country. So it is a massive river picking up the most of the state of Alabama into Tennessee, Mississippi, Georgia. So you're right, it covers a large area. But you'll see if you go click on that study that they did test upstream and downstream and see those concentrations happening there around the plant. So we're seeing higher concentrations there around the plant. And by the way, even if it was distributed evenly, mm-hmm. If there's elevated levels of arsenic and cadmium in a river, shouldn't we do what we can control and clean up what we know is leaking into the groundwater,
sure,
into the river?
But
unfortunately,
in this case,
we know it is concentrated there around the plant.
It is coming from Barry Seaway.
That's what the concentrations show, that upstream and downstream have less concentrations than they are at the plant.
And once again, y'all, the shock factor I had when I first saw the report that after the failure that William described at Kingston, catastrophic failure of the levee, here it all comes out, those levels and our levels are the same. And we haven't, I mean, that's, right. Jerry, Fort Morgan, said, good luck fighting Alabama Power until Sean becomes the head of the PSC. Now let's sue the hell out of the Corps and get the mud dumping stopped. Get the lawyer that the Fox lovers used.
love that, Jerry. And Jerry, I think I know who you are from Facebook as well. Don't tell me good luck fighting the power company. We need your help, man. Why don't you call over there and see who you know and ask them, hey, let's do the right thing here, guys, and let's get this stuff moved or recycled into concrete. And I think we're about to turn to talk about mud dumping here in a minute.
Yes, absolutely. And I'll launch my campaign for head of PSC. We'll see how long till they have me killed. But yeah, so I don't know if I have time for it, but maybe eventually. That's kind of what I aspire to. Matt says, hey, APCO is not going to do anything until their hand is forced. I'm glad that Baykeeper has stayed on them. I wish they had more power to force their hand, or some legislators would have a spine and do the right thing here. This should not be a political issue. It goes across all spectrums of being a Republican or a Democrat. That's from Matt.
Preach, Matt. I'm with you, buddy.
All right. As folks calling in, we'll get you on hold here at 343-0106. We come back from the news. We will answer more questions on this, but as well, yes, update on the mud dumping. We'll do that. But this is something that a catalyst, I think, in this story about coal ash at Barry. I mean, it's been the stalemate, and we don't know. You know, one side will say, well, that really isn't a risk, and the other side says it is. But now to say it is ongoing right now, today,
I think it's pretty safe to say.
Wow. All right, coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:35 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Hey, heads up too. I was talking to my buddy Jeff Stone at Stone Arms this morning and about some ammunition orders. You could do those as well. You know, talk about Stone Arms and the kiosk there to get your tax stamp, to get your silencer. We call them suppressors. The silencers are it's a branding thing with the machine. But yes, they know they're suppressors, the guys at Stone Arms. But they have a machine there. And I said for years, I was like, hey, I want to have a suppressor. I want to shoot with a suppressor. And I went through I had a manila file folder on my desk, and I'd fill out this form you download from ATF. And then you would have to go down the sheriff's department, get your fingerprints, and then somewhere else get a passport photo. And then it got to where I just didn't get it done. Jeff called me months and months and months and months ago and said, hey, dude, you ought to come out here and try this kiosk thing. So I go in the shop, and it's right there online. All you do is you put in the information, then hit like a go to next, put in the information, make sure that you put the right stuff in the right fields, the right numbers, take your fingerprints there on the screen, does the whole thing. They do the passport photo, and it sends, boom, to the feds like that. It took me 2 weeks to get the green light back. And then, of course, lucky for me, I'd already picked out a suppressor I wanted at Stone Arms. It's that easy to get it. And I also thought about this, too. I'm excited about deer season this year. I've talked to you all about hearing loss that I have, and I'm trying to mitigate, not just for, people think, oh, well, on a modern sporting rifle. Gunsmith there, you can get the can you want and get that put on your deer rifle. And now instead of having to fumble when you see a deer, fumble and put hearing protection in before you crack off a shot, because I know you don't do that when it's a buck. I know you don't, because I never did. You have that suppressor on there, you shoot, doesn't hurt your ears at all, and it makes it so much more fun to shoot the rifle. So whatever you're shooting, it suppressed is way better, and getting signed up to get that green light from the feds is very easy at Stone Arms. They're online. You want to see the details, stonearmsinc.com, or see them in person. They're just about a quarter mile west of Snow on Airport on the south side, Stone Arms, Inc. Go see them today. All right, continue our conversation. William Strickland, Executive Director of Mobile Baykeeper. I do want to get a few more things on the power company here, and then I want to switch gears. Tim said the power company is doing things they have permits to do. I can assure you there's nothing that's going on that they don't have a permit to do.
Well, first off, the plans to cap in place were permitted by the state of Alabama. However, the state of Alabama no longer has a valid permitting permission from the EPA.
Yeah,
when
EPA
it comes
came
to
against
coal ash.
ADEM, right? I mean, remember this story, like ADEM had given it, and so Tim's right, ADEM had done that, but then yes. EPA said, y'all violated in giving them that permit, right?
That's correct. And so we are in litigation with the power company at the federal level, saying that you violated the federal law, which is what regulates these coal ash. So you're correct in that they do have a permit from the state, ADEM, but they do not have a permit from the feds, the EPA, to cap in place.
And we have, once again, just I'll throw this in, just a little interstate rivalry. Southern Company that governs, it's parent company for Alabama and Georgia. In Georgia, y'all, they're getting theirs moved to upland sites.
The majority of it in all their coastal sites, correct.
All their coastal sites moved to upland sites. We are the biggest still out there, right?
Our pond is, 22 million tons.
And same parent company, y'all, is fighting this, even though in Georgia they've done it. So I hate the idea that the dogs, woof, woof, get something that we don't get in Alabama.
Yeah, we ought to be concerned that they don't consider us as good as our neighbors the east.
I guess I'm such a homer, but I feel that way sometimes. If y'all can do it over there, then...
Hey, in this study done by the University of Alabama, Roll Tide, Roll. It's a factor. I'll add one more thing to the permit question. There is a permit for what is allowed to be in the groundwater, and that permit is violated every time they do a test, and they pay the fine. But there is a permit there that is in violation. Punishment for violating that permit is not that they have to come up with a new plan for the coal ash.
That's interesting because obviously it's not enough of a disincentive to get something done if they violate every time. I mean, if a speeding ticket cost you a dollar and you didn't get points on your license, I might run a little hotter in that F-150 than I do, you know?
Yeah, so, it's certainly not incentivizing, and this may be one of those soft-on-crime issues.
They take the test, they fail it, they pay the fine, they keep going. Is what's happening.
Yep.
All right. Update us here on mud dumping. Every time you're in the in-between, when you're in and you come back in, I get a bunch of questions. I say, I don't know. William's going to come in. Where do we stand with the Corps and mud dumping?
Yeah. So first off, it's important to note that there is no mud dumping happening currently. At the moment, they're about to finish the deepening and widening project. And so they are using a hopper dredge down in the south end of the bay, and in the north end of the bay, they're putting it on land. And so the pipe that you guys have seen dumping in the middle of the bay is gone. To be honest with you, I'm not sure why, because we know there's ongoing maintenance that needs to happen, and their plans for ongoing maintenance is to dump 4.5 million cubic yards a year into our bay. But it's not currently being dumped, so if you've seen an improvement in water clarity, perhaps that's why.
That's good, and you get combination of this time of year, water cleans up and you don't have the silt in it, it's going to really clean up.
You can see some fish there in the marsh habitat. Now, unfortunately, I have to talk about what's going on in Washington. So we've got our government shut down. Mm-hmm. We were looking to see a solution during appropriations that was going to be a year solution, still seeking that long-term ban in Water Resources Development Act. Government shut down, they didn't pass appropriations, and we're already, as soon as they're back in, they're going to be talking about the Water Resources Development Act, which we pass next year. So the permanent ban at the federal level is still on the table, and we know that our federal elected officials have shown some support to this issue. Another thing to note is that there's some state efforts, there's some state legislators that want to get a law on the books at the state level getting a permanent ban. So everything that we desire to happen is still on the table, and there's currently not any mud being dumped in the bay.
Okay. To go back, for people who heard you say, wait a second, there's a permanent ban, federal permanent ban on this. Why are they doing it? If people have not been keeping up with this, that ban was in effect. There was an exception that was put in
2012 for an emergency. That's right.
Emergency to say, hey, we need to do it this way. With the idea, if you put an exception in, then you'll go back to the normal thing at some point. But here it is, 2025, and they're still working off that exception, right?
They are. The 2014, they did go back and get that.
So it's against federal rules, but they apply and say, hey, I think it's a budget thing or something like that. They said, hey, we got to do it this way.
There were storms that year and more sediment that we could manage by taking it offshore, do something else with it.
Okay, so we got this, hey, I need y'all to cut me a little slack here. We're under this situation. And then it never went back to the other way.
That's right. Since 2012, it's never gone back, and the volumes have increased greatly since that time. Now, let's back up, because there's probably some listeners that don't really know what we're talking about. We have a ship channel here, and the Army Corps of Engineers has to maintain that ship channel so we can get ships in and out. We can keep our economy flowing. Of course, we support that wholeheartedly. The issue is, what do we do with that dredge material to keep the ship channel open? And so the Army Corps of Engineers has a few different disposal options, but one of which is to dump 4.5 million cubic yards of sediment into our bay every year. We're the only place in the country that we know of that does that. And as you can imagine, in a shallow water estuary, what damage that might do to oyster reefs and water clarity, and therefore seagrass and other great habitats being harmed by too much sediment.
Yeah, we've talked about this before. I've said it's kind of like overeating in a way, because our delta exists, our fertile crescent here in the northern Gulf Coast exists because of sediment loads that have been coming since people's, even before we started monkeying around with stuff, right? So it comes and it builds, but then that's the right amount that the environment can keep up with. We're now, after eating our 2,500 calories for the day or whatever, then we're eating 18 pints of ice cream every day on top of it, right?
It's the same concern if you have a little creek running through your property and your neighbor decides to build something and all that runoff comes in there and silts in your creek and you're not seeing the crawfish and things like that in there anymore. It's like that on a much larger scale. In fact, we know that this is by far the largest input of sediment into Mobile Bay. And that's the studies that the Corps is using themselves.
So the whole drainage people were talking about before, of course, this big drainage that comes through the Mobile Tensaw Delta, that this is what they're doing in the bay is more than that load.
Yeah, that study shows that the whole river system coming down brings between 2.5 and 3 million cubic yards every year, and that they're putting 4.5 million cubic yards there into the
More than that, so not just 100% increase, but more than 100% increase.
That's right.
Wow. Let's see the Jerry comes back. Port of Savannah doesn't allow mud dumping as well. You point out that.
These are the ones that I know because I've talked to them personally. Port of Savannah, they're in South Florida, in Miami, Tampa. They don't allow this in the Mississippi, New Orleans, and Galveston Bay. Even dirty old Galveston. I've learned recently because I was saying they were doing some. They're permitted to do some, but it's only as an emergency option. They're not using that option and haven't yet.
So those big ports, southern ports we just talked about, we're the only one that they're doing this to.
That's my understanding.
It's kind of similar to what they're doing in Georgia.
They certainly don't allow it in the Chesapeake.
Yeah. Well,
it is banned at the state level up there in many places.
So, I don't know if you know this legislatively, I got to think because of the way even if they pass something in Montgomery, let's say next session they get to passed and banned this here. But the state can't tell the Federal Corps of Engineers what to do, can we? Aren't they above?
Well, I believe they can, as that's what's happened in Maryland, is that they
so the state has
state
told
law,
the federal
and then
agency.
The federal agency has to make plans to change their practices. The federal government can't come into our state and do whatever it wants.
I don't know. You can ask them sometimes. They believe they can, but that's a whole other thing.
Of course they do.
Yeah, right. Coming right back. More with William Strickland from Mobile Baykeeper. More of your questions at 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 12:50, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Thursday edition of the show. Heads up to my buddy Forrest at Blue Water Yacht Sales and Service. They continue their specials they had in September through October on service and parts for your Yamaha and Mercury engines, 15% off. That's going on right now. And in addition to that is you've got a chance to check out while you're there. Maybe if you're like me, I went by the other day, get some service stuff done. And while you're there, because when I talked about it the other day, I got like four people texting like, that thing's beautiful. It is. The 30XO from Regulator. So Regulator Boats has a hybrid that's kind of a, you know, enough inshore, enough offshore boat. Does a bit of everything, does it quite well. Well, they now have a 30-foot version of this. The 30XO from Regulator. It is one-of-a-kind performance, comfort, serious upgrades in it. Features a sharp hull for a smooth ride, wide-open cockpit that's perfect for fishing, or simply relaxing with family. What? Wants to do that fishing. Also, high-end finishes make the day on the water feel like a getaway. Now, right now on this boat, and it's got a lot of people's attention, me included, I like looking at it, you can take advantage of $10,000 off in factory rebates. You got to get this thing ordered and moving by November 14th, but right now, $10,000 off the top. You can get details when you go online, bluewateryachtsales.net, or the most fun is seeing them in person at Orange Beach Marina and on the East I-65 service road. All right, continue our conversation with William Strickland from Mobile Baykeeper. And if y'all have not seen, if you weren't here earlier in the conversation, I will urge you to go to mobilebaykeeper.org and look at this study that's released of, once again, the levels of cadmium and arsenic.
Arsenic, that's right.
So, y'all, this is what was sampled from. This is not in the water table or the wells. This is in the Mobile River, with the flow of the Mobile River. Those levels are as high as where the levee did fail in Kingston, Tennessee.
That's what this report shows?
And I mean, it just really got my attention. And because the amount it has to be for the volume of the Mobile River. and for it to have that much suspended.
It does show that there's some communication happening.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Now, back to mud dumping for a second here. And you mentioned they're not doing it right now. And there were two things. Y'all had talked about this and said, hey, you got to deep and widen the channel. Okay, cool.
Absolutely.
But when you finish that, right, that's because they have to maintain it.
Correct.
It's not like you just deepen it, widen it one time. It stays there. They got to maintain it.
Every year, 365 days a year.
Okay. So the idea is keep doing that. But, hey, take that spoil instead of, you know, spraying it like a sprinkler back into the bay, you take it and put it upland.
Put it upland, take it offshore. Use it for restoration is the best thing that we can do. As we know, our shorelines are eroding it. We measure it in feet, not inches, here in Mobile Bay. And so,
are they using some of that for the project there on the Dolphin Island Causeway?
They are. And we want to see more of that. So it's great when they are able to use dredge material in a way that is called beneficial use that can provide more habitat. We know our marshes are sinking. They need more sediment. We know that our shorelines need more sediment. There's some other creative options as well. There's a company that like to turn it into riprap and things like that that could be used to stabilize shorelines and build a big facility and provide lots of jobs down here. But it's just not affordable to do that as long as the cheapest option is to dump it into the bay.
Right. And it's also, we've talked about this just to get nuanced, I think it's worth talking about, is the kind of material they're going to dredge is going to be different from the mouth of the Mobile River to the mouth of the bay.
For sure.
And you go to the south end, you get sand, and people could, you know, Dolphin Island sure would like
that's
to have that
right.
sand.
Dolphin Island's always begging for more sand.
So, and that's the way, if we didn't have a ship channel, that sand would have made it across there and gone to Dolphin Island. But they can use it. Further up, we get siltier and siltier what drops out. But yeah, there are places to use that as well. It is a win-win. People ask us every time you're on that, can't believe nobody's done it yet today. They said, why don't we do Gilliard Island?
That's right.
Right, you know, we got Gilliard Island out there with the dredge spoil from the TIC.
I'm so glad everyone's thinking that way. We need to be thinking about Gilliard Island type uses. So we could put it on the island, but we could also use it to build back our shorelines, re-nourish our marshes. There's lots of good uses for this stuff, but it's not affordable to do that when the cheapest option is to take it from here and dump it right over there.
And once again, this option is only open because of an exception to the law. If the law went back to what they were enforcing before then and at all these other ports, then it would be the cheaper option because they wouldn't have the option for thin layer replacement, right?
And that's what we've been advocating to our federal elected officials. And I think the number one question I've been asking is, what are they going to do about that? And we know that we had Senator Britt's support there in that hearing. But I think the question folks should be asking is why are we not hearing more of that from you guys? We want to hear more. We want to hear it from everybody. We got elections coming up. Tell us how you're going to help us out here, because that commercial fishing industry, that community is just hurting from all different directions. But this destruction of that habitat and harming the oysters is something they're seeing really acutely. And they're feeling, the charter captains feel the same way. Property owners that bought bayfront property years ago, they want to see that clarity they came for. Everybody wants the grasses to come back and for us to have a improved fishery. So what we want to hear from our leaders, and they say, we have your back and we're going to do something about this.
Yeah. And, you know, our clear is not Destin or Port St. Joe. Our clear, you know, in the spring, we get high rivers, but to have times that, like I'm thinking about last summer when we didn't have big rain, and it took a long time for the bay to green up coming north compared to years past, you know, getting that for us, what I call clear, you know, clearer tinge. Speaking of people affected here on the commercial side, Earl, who I know is oysters, and sends me great pictures. He said, pointing out that oyster season opens Monday.
Season opens Monday, and the ribbon cutting for the deepening and widening project will be the same week. So it'll be a big week here for mud dumping, as we would like to hear something.
Pat says, go down to the bayou and ride along Codan Beach. You'll see at high tide, the water is literally on the road, and they just throw rocks down.
Maybe. Yeah, I mean, that's not necessarily a separate issue, but we living shorelines, putting oyster reefs and marsh grass and even seagrasses, hopefully someday back there, is going to really help with that as we're seeing this erosion like you're talking about. And so there's things we can do, but we have to all be committed to it. We have to make it a non-negotiable, or our leaders don't know what to do when we're split on these issues.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. On the living shoreline side, I think it's Jennifer Fidler and others
that
passed that legislation to at least make it equal between choosing
more is on the way. So you can expect more in particular from your Baldwin County delegation to incentivize living shorelines. And hopefully we can even get some money set aside where we can have some sort of public-private partnership.
It'd be awesome. Yeah. I think if you told people, like, stuff, they buy a property, he's got a bulkhead, they got their dock there and everything, they're like, I don't want to, I mean, I like the idea, but I'm not.
That's right. It's, if you it's made a little it easier, bit more on the upfront.
Yes.
And I will say it's just a little bit more. Those costs are getting more and more close, even without an incentive.
But I think long-term, if you made it a
you're
going
to be saving money because you don't have to go back and replace that bulkhead like you're doing right now every 10 years or so.
Yep.
And even with the increased wave action we're seeing from bigger ships and things like that, you can expect it to happen more often. We're going to have to make sure that we protect our shorelines with the things that we know that will last.
And listen, I'm just going to read this. We don't have to answer it, but I'll read this from Bill because William knows like what we talk about off there. William says, Bill says the causeway needs to be open to flush the mud.
Hey, Bill.
Just leave it at that. All right, people want to get, we mentioned the website. They can get the study there. You do a lot of stuff. Swim reports I love during the summertime, too. But getting signed up, being part of Baykeeper, helping out, how do they do it?
Yeah, go to mobobaykeeper.org. You can find all the things that we've talked about, including living shorelines there. At the top, you'll see coal ash. If you go to take action, you can see about mud dumping and then living shorelines, things like that. And there's a button that says become a member. And if you do become a member, we're having a party. We're going to eat a lot of oysters on October 12th over at Hope Farm in Baldwin County. We'd love to see you there.
When you say a lot of oysters, I mean, have you seen me go through oysters before?
I think we're going to have enough this go around.
Okay. All right.
Even with the mortality events we've seen this year, we've got them lined up.
Well, if you have to list it, I don't. You have to go too far down in mortality events for oysters. My picture shows up there at one point, so I don't know how that all works out. Good to see you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, next hour, coming right back, Kyle from Hamrick from Lanyap joins us. A lot to talk about with him. Also, we'll check some of these national stories and update you on the Mobile Sheriff, Paul Birch, had a presser yesterday about a deputy that was caught on camera. We'll give you the update on that when we come back.